You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Mona Bijour.
Brand to me does not mean like what's your brand mark or what font are you using or what does your packaging look like. Brand to me is kind of the same as how you would define your own personal brand. Like what do people say about you or your company when you're not in the room?
Mona is a partner at King's Circle Capital LLC, an investment and advisory firm where she has holdings in real estate, franchises, startups, and online businesses. Mona is also the founder of Jure, the premier online global B2B marketplace for wholesale buying that directly connects brands and retailers. A graduate of the University of Pennsylvania with an MBA from the Wharton School of Business, Mona lives in Brooklyn with her husband and two daughters. She is the Amazon best-selling author of Startups and Downs, The Secrets of Resilient Entrepreneurs, and a frequent contributor to TechCrunch, Entrepreneur, and Thrive Global. Mona, welcome to On Brand.
Thank you so much for having me.
It is great to have you. And I have to tell you, as someone that is a self-confessed word nerd, I love the title of your books, Startups and Downs, and I can't believe that that's the first play on that word with startups, that there are obviously downs that go with it. So would you first kind of set the stage and talk a little bit about what led you to this book and this focus?
Yeah, I mean, I have spent the last few years advising many first-time founders, and my conversations with them were really the inspiration for this book. I came to realize after many, many conversations that there is a set of issues that all business owners face, whether they're startup founders or just regular mom-and-pop shop business owners or, you know, are at the helm of large businesses. These are common challenges, whether kind of you're pitching investors or dealing with the competition or dealing with team loss. As a first-time founder, these aren't issues that people automatically know how to deal with from the get-go. And so in this book, I tried to uncover and share what I learned about overcoming these challenges so that entrepreneurs can kind of get back onto a positive mental track faster than I did in some situations.
So what are, you talk about common challenges, what are some of the more common challenges that that founders face?
Like I mentioned, I think it starts from, there's an arc, right? So it's getting started. So finding the resources to get started, whether it be capital, whether it be team members, whether it be resources such as like web development or branding, marketing agencies. So getting started. And then once you've started and launched, then there are issues around, you know, holding on to valuable employees, dealing with competition that suddenly emerges, dealing with replatforming your product or service, because maybe in the beginning you worked really quickly because you had finite resources, and then now there are some changes that you need to make to prepare for scale or to deal with scale. And then there's kind of like, you know, the ending phase, which is maybe leaving your business, turning it over to a more seasoned leadership team, or you get bored with the business and want to start something new, and dealing with kind of all those changes.
So as that arc takes place, what in your experience is the role that brand plays in these early stage first time founders? Is it getting addressed accordingly? Are there challenges that go with that?
Absolutely. I think that in my experience, founders don't spend enough time thinking about brand and what that means and how it can create a competitive moat around your business. And you kind of, as a founder, need to work backwards. So, you know, you have your vision, which takes like 7 to 10 years to achieve. And then you have maybe 3 or 4 strategies to help you get to that vision. And the strategies, you know, take anywhere between 2 to 3 years. So if you add up all those strategies and kind of hit those goals, then you become your vision. And I find that most founders really get bogged down in the tactics, which sit underneath the strategies. And vision and strategy requires a lot of thought around brand. Like, who do you want to be to the world? How do you want to present yourself? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to kind of stick to your word on your brand? And I don't think that a lot of founders initially spend time on that piece, which would serve them well. I think it happens by nature because, you know, competition emerges and so on, and brand becomes very important. But I think a lot of founders would do well to kind of work backwards and kind of build in a brand strategy early from the get-go.
Well, it's interesting because it almost seems like there's sometimes a disconnect that happens in terms of, because in the startup space, there's a lot of talk about mission, about vision. And I think sometimes we put, I love the idea of working backwards, because I think sometimes in the linear order of things, we sometimes put brand a little further down the chute. But to your point that you made, it is something that does belong to really build a standout brand. It needs to be addressed much earlier in that process of projecting out and thinking about what it is you want to be.
Yeah, and I mean, brand to me does not mean like what's your brand mark or what font are you using or what does your packaging look like. Those are a bunch of tactics that, you know, ultimately level up to your vision. And, you know, I think brand to me is kind of the same as how you would define your own personal brand. Like, what do people say about you or your company when you're not in the room? And so, yeah, they might say like, oh, guess what? I got this mattress in a great looking box, but that's not really what you want them to say. And most likely they probably won't say that. I mean, I think it's really about, to me, brand is kind of all the interactions that you have with your product or service. And, you know, so when I was building my first business, it was really, we were a software, but we were software as a service. And, you know, it was really about over-indexing on customer service. Like, we were paranoid about what people would say about us when we weren't in the room. Because we are serving an entire fashion industry. So they talk a lot. They see each other at trade shows. They're kind of around each other. And so, you know, the worst thing in the world for us was like that they would badmouth us. And so we kind of like, that was kind of the ultimate paranoia. And so we kind of worked backwards from there to build all the tactics around never letting that happen.
Well, I think that's how brand can be overwhelming, is because to your last point, it is everything that someone says when you're not in the room, which is a very big question, which has to be addressed and thought about and have tactics and resources put behind it. But it's also, you pointed out the box thing, how things are shipped and what that experience is like. It's also that too. So I think sure. It's hard to think about without kind of giving yourself a headache, because there is a way to look at this and see that really everything kind of boils down to that brand experience like you're talking about. But there's a lot of different tentacles to wrestle at a really hard time in the stage of a business for a founder.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard, but I think it's a much needed and valid exercise, right? So it's not so much like this is who we're going to be. It's also like this is who we're not going to be. And making those decisions. And yes, you might have resource constraints in the beginning where you can't be all the things that you want, aspire to be when you grow up, but just kind of putting a stake in the ground and articulating it, I find is super important, not only to your customers and your constituents, but also to your employees. And so I think if you don't articulate what your brand is, like I advise all my founders to create a brand book, even if they're not like a consumer products company, that they can hand out to all their employees on day one. Even if you have 5 employees, it's worth an exercise doing, because then, you know, you don't get in this trouble where, you know, you're as leadership, you're being asked, like, should I do this or should I not? Should I spend time on this or not? And then you're kind of like shooting from the hip. I will never forget when I worked for Chanel, that, you know, their vision or their mission or credo, I think is really that they are the ultimate house of luxury. And I always found that to be really compelling because, you know, when you're the nose for Chanel or when you're designing their handbags, like if you know that they are the ultimate house or you work for the ultimate house of luxury, then you're going to pick the best ingredients for your perfume. You're going to pick the best tailors or hand crafters for your handbags. Like it is like kind of your North Star. And so I've always found that to be valuable because then employees can make decisions when you're not in the room and they feel empowered.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the 7 dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with 2 A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show. I love this idea of creating a brand book. And I think it's important to point out to your earlier point of when you mentioned to me, brand isn't, you know, the fonts that you use. And I think that when some folks listen out there, they're going to hear brand book and they're going to think, okay, that specifies what fonts we use, how much space is around the logo. And I'm guessing that when you advise founders that regardless of industry that they should have a brand book, what types of questions should that brand book answer?
I don't want to minimize like fonts and,
no.
You know, brand mark. I think it's, you know, part and parcel with what we're talking about. But I mean, in general, it contains kind of, you know, the pain point that you're trying to address. So why when days are really, really bad, why do you get up in the morning and go to this job, right? We're all smart people. We have lots of choices. We can work for anyone or build anything. So why do we do this? And what's the pain that we're trying to solve, or what's the gap in the market that we're trying to fill? Then it's the mission. And then, you know, it's the, you know, objective. So kind of like based on the mission and the pain point, then what do we see as the resolution? Then I like to include like target market, like profile. So like, are you targeting men from the ages of 25 to 45? Like, are they health conscious? Where do they live? And then I like to see like customer personas. So highlighting like 2 or 3 customer personas. And then we go into, I mean, this is really detailed. I hope this is okay. But, then kind of insights. So at, you know, assuming that you've talked to a lot of customers, like And if they were to use your product or service, what would they say? You know, if you're doing something like a healthy food product, would they say, like, you know, I love eating this healthy food. It's motivated me to like exercise 4 or 5 times a week. And, you know, I kind of wear this as a badge of honor. You know, like, what do they say when they use your product? And then kind of go into a competitive audit. So like, who else is doing this? Where do you fill the gaps? What are the holes? What is the competitive positioning out there? What's their digital brand presence? And then kind of like based on that audit, like what are the key takeaways and like, what are you seeing in the market? What are you not seeing? And then where do you fit in?
Well, and all of that seems like it's incredibly directional too, that to your, I think before I asked you to describe what's in the brand book, you talked about the idea being after anyone in the organization's exposure to this touchstone, that you have a North Star, that you know where you can go, you know how to address issues that arise, and it's pretty powerful for getting everyone on that same page, on that unified front.
Yeah, it's a big book. I mean, you go into kind of brand voice, and then obviously you go into positioning. So what do you do, and you know, how do you do it? And then what's your brand promise? And then what's your value proposition? And then your brand values, you know, so it's quite extensive and requires a lot of thought. And it's something that, you know, can go into like brand personality and tone and strategic positioning and so on. But it's an exercise that takes a lot of thinking, but it's a good exercise to do, you know, with your management team early on.
So in the founder startup space, you know, in a bit, I'll ask for the brand that's made you smile, but I want to see if I can get another brand example out of you specific to the timing of this, the arc of this. Are there startup brands that you find yourself frequently pointing to and say, they knew coming out of the gate, or, and even if it wasn't perfect, that they had a general idea that they continued to adapt and tone, but it was directionally sound?
I mean, at the startup level, I would say, you know, Warby Parker has stayed true, and hasn't really deviated as they've expanded. I know for a fact that the founders, you know, knowing some of the founders, they built, and did the work around like branding, brand book, brand archetype, you know, they did a lot of this work. And I think that served them well because their brand has stayed consistent to what they started out with. You know, and I think at the luxury level, you see that a lot too. These aren't startup brands, but you see that with Chanel, you see that with Hermes. They stay very, very true. I mean, all of those luxury brands have a brand book and they do not deviate. And I think that is very powerful, because I do see a lot of brands who there's a lot of flip-flopping happening. I mean, I live in Brooklyn, and even like small mom and pop brands, you know, they have this notion of what a brand should be, but then when something else arises, they kind of like flip-flop, and that kind of is a turnoff for me.
So we talk about flip-flop. Does this run counter to the startup idea of a pivot? What's the fine line between, or is there a bold line between what makes a startup pivot versus a brand flip-flop?
Yeah, I mean, I think that in startup land, a pivot is really just a change in how you monetize your business. So that's different. Brand is, you know, brand is your personality. And so, you know, like you and I have a personality, it's been formed, but it probably hasn't changed that much. I mean, they do say that like by the time you're 6, that is your personality. You can't do that much to change it. And so that's kind of how I, it's like brand is a personality. It's a living and breathing thing. Obviously it changes based on external factors and how people interact with it. But the deep down, like who you are, your DNA doesn't change, and shouldn't change. And it comes off inauthentic many times when it does. Like where brands are chasing the next new big thing and they're just trying to decide who they want to be when they grow up. And I think customers see that pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, it seems, I think, like I said, as I was saying it, it does seem like it's more of a harder line between those two and definitely something
that correct.
By definition is a little different. You talked about your personality. Is there a role? We talk a lot about personal brands, and some brands are solely personal brands. But with startups, is there a unique intersection between the personal brand of the founder and the brand that they are creating?
That's such a good question. I think in years like kind of 1 through 5, you know, it's very hard to separate the founder from the company, because the founder has so much passion. The founder is on a mission, and you need that founder to kind of like help build the brand. Like it's part and parcel. And then I think once a startup hits some meaningful metric of scale, then it becomes necessary almost to separate the founder from the company. The company needs to put frameworks in place. The company needs to put kind of, you know, operational structure in place. And it can be hurtful to a business if the founder is kind of the brand at that point. And we've seen that obviously with a lot of SoftBank portfolio companies and, you know, so on. So, I mean, that's playing out to some degree today. Uber, WeWork, and so on.
Now, conversely, is it, you mentioned how important it is for the founder to be sort of the brand builder in chief. If there is, in those early days especially, is it harder if your founder is quieter, is more of a behind the scenes operator versus an out front brand builder?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the dirty little secret, or maybe it's not a secret, is that most successful founders are actually not extroverts; they're introverts, or right on the cusp. And so I don't think it is really about like how dramatic your personality is. Obviously, it helps to be articulate, so that you can articulate, you know, the brand values to your people. But I think it's really about in the early stages is making sure that everyone stays true to what you've all decided the brand is. It's almost like a gatekeeper or someone who holds the scorecard and is holding everyone accountable to upholding those brand values.
I think that's fascinating. And I love the dirty little secret of it. Mona, something that we'd like to no longer keep a secret is a brand that has made you smile recently.
Yeah. I mean, right down the street from me is a store called Camp, that is started by Ben Kaufman, who started Quirky about a decade ago. But Camp made me smile. I took my kids in there, and it is basically the new toy store. And so it made me smile because, you know, we walked in and I was with my young daughter, and she pushed on a door and it was like a magical door that opened, and then she was swept down this elevator and then, you know, went down to the kind of ground floor, and it was this whole magical land, and it was really an experience. And she spent maybe an hour in the store, and they have different rooms and, you know, different kind of play areas. And it's kind of this like amazing approach on elevating this notion of a toy store. Like, I really believe my daughter felt like she was in a candy store, you know, but it was with toys. And so it made her smile. So it certainly made me smile.
Well, and that's kind of the culmination of everything that we've been talking about, of the experience. Because, you know, take what we think of as a toy store, and it is has historically been, and now they're not doing so well, great big boxes with unremarkable shelves with toys on them.
And that's right.
And magic doors and things like that. It sounds amazing. I want to go.
Yeah, you would like it. You would enjoy it.
Mona, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yes. Well, I have a new book out, as you mentioned, and that kind of summarizes a lot of what we talked about, as well as other lessons from founders that I've interviewed, and that is available on Amazon. It's called Startups and Downs, The Secrets of Resilient Entrepreneurs. And it really focuses on the mental talk tracks that founders can use to get back onto a happy path when things go crazy or get challenging. And I also have an investment firm where I invest my own capital. And so you can find me on LinkedIn as well as kingcirclecapital.com.
All right. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Mona, thanks for being on brand with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment to rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.